We're starting chapter 11 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, called Hermione's Helping Hand. As Hermione had predicted, the sixth year's free periods were not the hours of blissful relaxation Ron had anticipated, but times in which. Come on, Kindle, turn.
There?
Sorry, the Kindle sometimes takes a long time to turn a page every so often. Okay, here we go. But rather, times in which to attempt to keep up with the vast amount of homework they were being set. Not only were they studying as though they had exams every day, but the lessons themselves had become even more demanding than ever before. Harry barely understood half of what Professor McGonagall said to them these days. Even Hermione had to ask her to repeat instructions once or twice. Incredibly, and to Hermione's increasing resentment, Harry's best subject had suddenly become potions, thanks to the Half-Blood Prince. Non-verbal spells were now expected, not only in defense against the dark arts, but in charms and transfiguration, too. Harry frequently looked over at his classmates in the common room, or at mealtimes to see them purple in the face and straining as though they had overdosed on you-know-poo. But he knew that they were really struggling to make spells work without saying incantations aloud. It was a relief to get outside into the greenhouses. They were dealing with more dangerous plants than ever in herbology, but at least there they were allowed to swear loudly if the venomous tentacula seized them unexpectedly from behind. One result of their enormous workload and the frantic hours of practicing nonverbal spells was that Harry, Ron, and Hermione had so far become unable to find time to visit Hagrid. He had stopped coming to meals at the staff table, an ominous sign, and on the few occasions when they had passed him in the corridor or out in the grounds, he had mysteriously failed to notice them or hear their greetings. "We've got to go and explain," said Hermione, looking up at Hagrid's huge empty chair at the staff table the following Saturday at breakfast. "We've got Quidditch tryouts this morning," said Ron, "and we're supposed to be practicing that Aguamenti charm from Flitwick. Anyway, explain what? How are we to tell him that we hated his stupid subject?" "We didn't hate it," said Hermione. "Speak for yourself. I haven't forgotten the Scroots," said Ron darkly. "And I'm telling you now, we've had a narrow escape. You didn't hear him going on about his gormless brother. We'd have been teaching Grop how to tie his shoelaces if we stayed." "I hate not talking to Hagrid," said Hermione, looking up, upset. "We'll go down after Quidditch," Harry assured her. He, too, was missing Hagrid, although, like Ron, he thought that they were better off without Grop in their lives. But trials might take all morning, the number of people who might have applied. He felt slightly nervous at confronting the first hurdle of his captaincy. "I don't know why this team's this popular all of a sudden." "Oh, come on, Harry," said Hermione, suddenly impatient. "It's not Quidditch that's popular, it's you. You've never been more interesting, and frankly, you've never been more fanciable." Ron gagged on a large piece of kipper. Hermione spared him one look of disdain before turning back to Harry. "Everyone knows you've been telling the truth now, don't they? The whole wizarding world has had to admit that you were right about Voldemort being back, and that you really have fought him twice in the last 2 years and escaped both times. And now they're calling you the Chosen One. Well, come on. Can't you see why people are fascinated by you?" Harry was finding the Great Hall very hot all of a sudden, even though the ceiling still looked cold and rainy. "And you've been through all that persecution from the Ministry when they were trying to make you out to be unstable and a liar. You can still see the marks on the back of your hand where that evil woman made you write with your own blood. You stuck to your story anyway." "You can still see where those brains got hold of me in the Ministry. Look," said Ron, shaking back his sleeves. "And it doesn't hurt that you've grown about a foot over the summer, either," Hermione finished, ignoring Ron. "I'm tall," said Ron inconsequentially. The post owls arrived, swooping down through rain-flecked windows, scattering everyone with droplets of water. Most people were receiving more post than usual. Anxious parents were keen to hear from their children and to reassure them, in turn, that all was well at home. Harry had received no mail since the start of term. His only regular correspondent was now dead, and although he had hoped that Lupin might write occasionally, he had so far been disappointed. He was very surprised, therefore, to see the snowy white Hedwig circling amongst the brown and gray owls. She landed in front of him carrying a large square package. A moment later, an identical package landed in front of Ron, crushing beneath it his minuscule and exhausted owl, Pigwidgeon. "Ha," said Harry, unwrapping the parcel to reveal a new copy of Advanced Potion Making, fresh from Flourishing Plots. "Oh, good," said Hermione, delighted. "Now you can give that graffitied copy back." "Are you mad?" said Harry. "I'm keeping it. Look, I've thought it out." He pulled the old copy of Advanced Potion Making out of his bag and tapped its cover with its wand, muttering, "Defindo." The cover fell off. He did the same thing with a brand new book. Hermione looked scandalized. He then swapped the covers, tapped each, and said, "Riparo." There sat the prince's copy, disguised as a new book, and there sat the fresh copy from Flourish and Blotts, looking thoroughly second-hand. "I'll give Slughorn back the new one. He can't complain. It costs 9 galleons. Hermione pressed her lips together, looking angry and disapproving, but she was distracted by a third owl landing in front of her carrying that day's copy of the Daily Prophet. She unfolded it hastily and scanned the front page. "Anyone we know dead?" asked Ron, in a determinedly casual voice. He posed the same question every time Hermione opened her paper. "No, but there have been more Dementor attacks," said Hermione, "and an arrest." "Excellent. Who?" said Harry, thinking of Bellatrix Lestrange. "Stan Shunpike," said Hermione. "What?" said Harry, startled. "Stanley Shunpike, conductor on the popular wizarding conveyance, the Night Bus, has been arrested on suspicion of Death Eater activity. Mr. Shunpike, 21, was taken into custody late last night after a raid on his Clapham home." "Stan Shunpike, a Death Eater?" said Harry, remembering the spotty youth he had met first 3 years ago. "No way." "He might have been put under an imperious curse," said Ron reasonably. "You can never tell." "Doesn't look like it," said Hermione, who was still reading. "It says here he was arrested after he was overheard talking about the Death Eater's secret plans in the pub." She looked up with a troubled expression on her face. "If he was under the imperious curse, he'd hardly stand around gossiping about their plans, would he?" "Sounds like he was trying to make it out, as though he knew more than he did," said Ron. "Isn't he the one who claimed he was going to become Minister of Magic when he was trying to chat up those Vila?" "Yeah, that's him," said Harry. "I don't know what they're playing at, taking stands seriously." "They probably want to look like as though they're doing something," said Hermione, frowning. "People are terrified. You know the Petiel twins' parents want them to go home? And Aloy's Midgeon has already been withdrawn. Her father picked her up last night." "What?" said Ron, goggling at Hermione. "But Hogwarts is safer than their homes. Bound to be. We've got Auras and all those extra protective spells, and we've got Dumbledore." "I don't think we've got him all the time," said Hermione very quietly, glancing over toward the staff table at the top of the Prophet. "Haven't you noticed? His seat's been empty as often as Hagrid's this past week." Harry and Ron looked up at the staff table. The headmaster's chair was indeed empty. Now Harry came to think of it, he had not seen Dumbledore since their private lesson a week ago. "I think he's left the school to do something with the Order," said Hermione in a low voice. "I mean, it's all looking serious, isn't it?" Harry and Ron did not answer, but Harry knew that they were all thinking the same thing. There had been a horrible incident the day before when Hannah Abbott had been taken out of Herbology to be told that her mother had been found dead. They had not seen Hannah since. When they left the Gryffindor table 5 minutes later to head down to the Quidditch pitch, they passed Lavender Brown and Parvati Patil. Remembering what Hermione had said about the Patil twins' parents wanting them to leave Hogwarts, Harry was unsurprised to see that the two best friends were whispering together, looking distressed. What did surprise him was that Ron drew level with them. Parvati suddenly nudged Lavender, who looked around and gave Ron a wide smile. Ron blinked at her and then returned the smile uncertainly. His walk instantly became something more like a strut. Harry resisted the temptation to laugh, remembering that Ron had refrained from doing so after Malfoy had broken Harry's nose. Hermione, however, looked cold and distant all the way down to the stadium through the cool, misty drizzle, and departed to find a place in the stands without wishing Ron good luck. And I think we'll stop there.
I'm sorry. It's late. It's bedtime for the puppy and kitten, and I love you so much, baby girl. Sleep well, darling. Good night.